It's the Max Show.
What's the plan, Frank?
All right. You start when you want, Kelly. We'll start when we want. It's the Max Show. We're here to discuss the week in Apple, anything that's gone on. It is T-minus 10 to Macworld. Plus 10. Minus 10. Minus 10. We're 10 days away from me, Paul Wheatley, and Adam sharing farts.
How can that be possible?
It's great, isn't it? What a thought.
Yeah, so jealous.
I've got the T-shirts. British Tech Network Macworld Tour 2014. And we've all got one. I've got one for Paul and I've got one for Adam as well. So, we'll be doing the Mac Show live from the show stage, stage two, and that'll be on Thursday at 3:15 local time. So it'll be pretty late here, unfortunately, but it's the only time we've been given. We'll record it, though, and we will put it up. And we're also going to do a live show floor walk before that. So from sort of 1 o'clock onwards, we're going to do we're going to go where you tell us. So we'll have the live feed up and you'll see everything that we can see, and this is all going to be horribly wrong, I know, but you can tell us where to go in the chat room. We'll have the chat room up and you'll go here, go there, what's down there, and we'll go wherever you want, and we'll tell you, and we'll interview the people and that kind of stuff. So it should be a really good show, and if someone can record it for us, it might actually be postable later on. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple and to get really, really unfathomably excited about getting drunk in a couple of weeks. Great panel. Starting us off, top left, as always, Mr. Christensen, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good.
Nice.
I'm so excited. so excited. I can barely sleep. I got a message from Jeff Gamet. He said he got to pull out from the show last night because his schedule's just got a little bit too crazy. And I said, "You're sitting there going, I've got to do my keynote, and I haven't done it yet." And he went, "Oh,
he's not going to do that for another week."
Yeah, well, there you go. He's already blocking stuff out in his schedule to not do it.
That's why I don't sign up for that sort of stuff. I really should do a session, but I know that I get too busy running around the show floor doing interviews and stuff like that. I try not to schedule too much. I learned my lesson the first year I went and I like scheduled everything, and you just miss all your meetings, and then you're like running around and you can't do what you want to do. So
that's because you're a star, though. I'm a nobody.
Yeah, you'll see. I'm a nobody. But I don't know what it's going to be like this year. I don't know. I know they're moving it over. Ah. I'm curious. Are they? Because we don't know if they're in both sides of that North Hall or not, or if they're just going to be in one side, or I haven't heard.
The email I got from Kelly, Kathy was telling me that we're on stage two, and it did say the hall. Let me just find it.
It's everything's in North Hall this year, but there's kind of two parts of North Hall, and there's a tunnel that runs under the roadway. So there's like, I don't know if it's North Hall or West. I don't know. There's two sides. There's like the big side where Apple used to be.
It sounds like a zombie shooter. Yeah.
There's that and side and the other side.
Yeah.
I'll be on the second stage at Macworld iWorld. If you want to record it, you can bring your own recording device and plug it into the system. Everything else is there. We can't allow for any live streaming in the area, though. I don't think that means we can't live stream. It just means they haven't got anything for us to live stream. So we need to take a MiFi and see if we can get it to work.
You might check with them on that. It gets really weird on some of that stuff.
Second stage will be on the exhibit floor, booth 1202.
Okay.
1202 makes me think that I should. That's like an address or something that I should know. But never mind. Next to him, joining us last minute because he's got off work early, our fellow flatmate, brothers in farts. It's Paul Wheatley.
No idea.
It's Paul. How you doing, bud?
I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm too excited.
I know.
We booked our flights to LA as well. We're going to go and see Tom Merritt for the day.
Yeah, that'll be entertaining.
And based on the price of those flights, he better be funny.
Yeah, we should have booked them months ago. But where we are. I'm not allowed to talk about it at home anymore.
Why?
It's got to a level that nobody wants to hear about it anymore.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, the thing is, I've been absolutely blasted out with work for the last couple of weeks. And then this week, the work I've had is actually quite easy because I've gone out and it's just shoot a bit and then come back and sit and edit it. So it's been a lot more relaxed. So I've had more time to think about it this week, whereas up until sort of Tuesday afternoon, I was just like, got too much on.
But never mind. Yeah, I've got absolutely everything all sorted out now, though. So, got my dollars bought.
I mean, if we're doing this now, I mean, we're 10 minutes in and we still haven't done the panel intros yet. Imagine what it's going to be. Don't bother listening.
Get on with it.
Don't bother listening to next Friday's show, because it won't be anything else but us fawning over how excited we are.
And also very tired as well, so it's not going to be entertaining.
No, next Friday, we haven't gone yet.
Oh, no, it's next Sunday we're doing the show, isn't it?
No, we're doing it Friday as well.
Oh, you do? Oh, right, okay.
We're gonna do a show on Friday like normal, and then on Sunday we're gonna stay up all night to get lucky and do another show that we'll post before I leave for the airport. It will literally go click and it's uploading, and that's that. And then to keep us awake, and then we'll do some blogs or something like that, or little video diaries or something from the journey and from the when we get there. And people will be sick of it by the time Matt will actually start.
Yeah, people are sick of it now.
I know. Next to him, Kelly. Are you coming to Macworld, girl?
Oh my God, Macworld.
Are you coming?
Yes.
Yes. All these people I've never met, but I know really well.
I know. That was my favorite part about going to Macworld after I started writing it. Tuwa was getting to go to Macworld and meet all these people that I've known forever, which is an odd sentence unless...
Well, we kind of had the bash for the last 3 years now, and the bash is weird because people turn up and you just, I know who you are, you say hello, and like you get odd people go, oh, nice to meet you, and hold out their hand to shake you. Oh, for God's sake, come here. I know you already.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm too excited. Charlotte, you going to Macworld? Oh, sorry. Oh, come on, Charlotte, you can come. You got a rich daddy.
Got nothing to do. I haven't got the time to come. I've got to stay here and do stuff. I was going to come. I'd literally created Get Charlotte to Macworld Fund.
Right.
That I was like saving up. I was going to come.
Yeah.
I was going to see Jeff Gamet. I was going to hang out with you. I was going to give Kelly Gamot the biggest hug ever.
But you drank
it. I've got to do stuff here.
You drank your way through it too early.
No, it's not got nothing to do with it. I literally physically can't take the time to go. I'm so gutted.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm so upset and I'm just sick with envy, but I'm going to come next year. I'm making a promise now.
Oh, well, moving on.
I'm going to be there next year.
Then I will too.
Bad luck, Charlotte. We'll do it next year. We're having a working trip. Paul and I decided we weren't going to have a jolly. Yep. We're going to have a working trip. It's going to be about the network. It's going to be about pressing the flesh and showing our faces and smiling happily.
Right. And it's babies. Great to get it over there. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah. If you've got a baby, you need kissing and signing. Because
you're going to sign a baby?
If they want. I don't care. It's different laws, isn't it? They've got to catch me first. Right. The week in Apple. What's going on? Well, iOS 7, I suppose, is the starting point, isn't it? It's got to be. We had iOS 7 came out Monday 7.1. night.
7.1. 7 came out a while back.
Yeah, okay. So
for the record.
Yeah. We're on to 7.1 now, just pulse. Like macOS is.
Where
now
have you
I'm
been?
Going to get confused forever.
The last one. The last 7.1. I mean, I've got it even got in front of me and it says 7.1. This thing is supposed to have brought in many new features, improvements and bug fixes, including better touch ID accuracy and reliability. Adam, you can tell us about that one in a minute, which the company boasted of during the release of the firmware version. Does not appear to be proceeding very smoothly, however. Who's gone? Oh, hello, Charlotte.
Hi.
If you feel like staying with us, don't worry about it.
No, I do. I couldn't cope with hearing about Macworld anymore.
A lot of people are reporting that they've had no problems. I did a little survey around Twitter at the start of the on Tuesday and said, so how's the iOS 7.1 hangover? And I didn't get a single person say that there was a problem. They all said it was good. And a lot of people were saying the 4S had suddenly gone, sort of sprung to life with it.
I had a problem.
Interesting.
I really like it.
Go on, tell us about it, sir.
So I had a problem on my iPad. Upgraded my iPad, and immediately the whole thing became completely unresponsive.
Ooh.
I could not type. I got to the lock screen to type in my passcode, and I started hitting the buttons, and nothing.
Nice.
And then there was like a 5-second delay, and all of a sudden everything starts typing in. So, I've had this on my Mac in the past where it gets in this weird place, and you start typing, and nothing's appearing on the screen, right? And then a few seconds later, everything just sort of flies in all at once. So it was doing that. And so I went on and Apple's discussion boards, and I'm going to pull this up because I'm going to get it wrong if I don't have it in front of me. What I discovered was there's a simple little fix, and it worked great.
Oh, okay.
You go into general, settings general, and you scroll mm-hmm. down to reset, and there is a thing that says reset keyboard dictionary. You press that, and it will warn you that if you're going to do that, it's going to delete any custom dictionary words that you've typed out. So you know how it kind of remembers those words that you commonly type that aren't part of the main dictionary?
So the words will... Swear word.
Those will all get wiped out. But if you reset that and say okay, then everything's back to normal. Something weird with the dictionary. I don't know if it's like corruption of that custom dictionary that causes the typing to go all wonky. But that one hit me, and that's the fix for it. Excuse it was me. Really annoying.
I do apologize for those of you listening in stereo.
I haven't had the opportunity to ask Mr. Kelly how it's running on his 4S, but I'm having less of the app switch springboard crash, which I was getting an awful lot of on my iPad and making me very angry. And I less think that my... I haven't seen it at all since.
Me neither.
And also, I think my Touch ID is working better, but I've spent a lot of the last week hopped up on cold medication, so I couldn't say for sure if that's the case.
Ooh, I have a Touch ID thing, too, that I discovered. Someone told me about that. Actually, Steve Gibson discovered.
Go on.
Oh.
So if you're having trouble with your Touch ID, this is really interesting. So if you go into, again, settings, passcode, and Touch ID on your iPhone 5S, or Touch ID and passcode, I think it is.
You have an incoming call from Charlotte Alexander.
Right. Oh, we got an incoming call from Charlotte.
Charlotte's bouncing and dropping off everywhere. Charlotte, stop downloading the porn and concentrate, please.
Sorry.
Okay, so you go into Touch ID and passcode, and a lot of people know this trick, but if you're in that mode, there's a section called fingerprints. And if you mm-hmm. press the Touch ID, it will sort of highlight which finger you've registered. You know, it'll recognize it. So it'll kind of appear in gray and then fade away. What Steve Gibson discovered was that is actually doing another scan and adding to the fingerprint data. So what you can do is if you're having trouble with it recognizing a fingerprint, you can come in here and you can just start pressing on that and letting it light up and fade away and then adjust your finger a little bit more. And get the edges and the sides, and you can give it more data points, basically, to become more accurate.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that saved me a whole 5 minutes of my life, because I was listening to the Maccast in the car yesterday, and I was thinking, I'm going to have to come back and listen to that section, but you've just saved me the time. That was, fantastic. That was a public service.
So well done. I did that, and a couple fingers I was having trouble with are much more accurate now, so... And I think out of the box, it's supposed to, like, every time you do log in successfully, it's my understanding when Apple introduced the feature, they said that would be, you know, every time you use it, it's supposed to get more accurate because it's recognizing successful scans and adding that to the data. So this is a way, I guess, to force that to happen a bunch of times. And the key is make sure that you're getting, you know, parts of your finger that might not normally. So if you're just sort of throwing your finger down on there, you might be off to the side or at some weird angle and stuff like that. So put in all those different positions, you know, really move your finger around. Oh, there you go.
My tip for Touch ID is that when I set them up initially, I walked around in the living room and the kitchen while I was setting them so that it was more like how I actually hold my phone when I'm out walking around. And then I feel like for both my thumbs anyway, that seems to have helped a lot. Because the first time I did the whole, like, set it on the table and don't move anything and push really nicely and push really nicely. And then when I would use it, it was crap. And so I tried it walking around I did laps like through the living room and the kitchen, and that seemed to make it a lot more responsive.
Good idea. Right. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't had any of this because I haven't got a device that's got fingerprint thing on it. So.
I didn't have any of the 7.0 problems. I know I'm in a minority, but I haven't actually noticed too much of a difference apart from the UI changes.
I've got 7 on me Sky watching iPad here on my desk, and I've got 7 on me iPad Air, or the last point update of 7. And I haven't had any issues at all, none, with iOS 7 in the slightest. So I've got no idea. I mean, people must be suffering because they wouldn't have issued bug fixes, unquote, unless there was some bugs. But I haven't had
The people who were hitting some of that stuff were hitting it really consistently, and particularly on an iPad when you're using the gestures. If you're swapping from app to app and that's causing the springboard to crash every time, that sucks. It's like so unbelievably inconvenient.
Yeah. The Springboard crashes on my iPhone were just ridiculous. They really were. And I have no idea why.
It's a glitchy, horrible device. What can I say?
Well, it's fixed now. Like I said, since I updated to 7.1, I haven't seen a single one. So
yeah,
I really dislike the new slide to unlock animation on the iPad. It looks broken and crap. I know that's really minor and you very rarely see it, but it really bugs me. I don't like it. The sheen that kind of goes across it just looks broken. And I don't like the new circles for the hang up your call thing as well. That's a bit.
Yeah, I don't like the phone button, which is.
That's copied from Samsung.
My new favorite feature is really dumb.
Go on.
Which is just the darker colors.
Have they toned them down a bit then?
No, you have an option to darken the colors. So sort of bright blue that everything is by default for me is now more like a reflex blue for the print nerds out there. They'll know what I'm talking about.
Tell me how to do this.
So it's under accessibility. So settings, general accessibility, and then increase contrast. And there's just a little toggle that says darken colors. And if you flip that, everything that's bright will just turn a little bit, just adjust the gamma a little bit.
Ooh, nice.
Much richer. Ooh, it feels like much richer and more elegant to me than bright and kid-like. So. It's really subtle, but you notice it, or I've noticed it.
And it's increased contrast?
It's under that.
Okay, and then darken colors.
There you go.
Reduce white point.
You can also, you can make it even darker if you want to set your... I like the whites a little bit crisper, so I've left that one not tweaked.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, that would be white balance, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. So
you could do that.
Yeah, but like I have my brightness down pretty low, and even still... like if it's in a dimly lit room and I'm like, if the lights are off and we're watching a movie or something and my phone goes off, like it's very, very bright, even with the brightness down. So being able to turn that down even further is, very, very nice. Yay.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. See what you like. But it took a while. Like I turned it and I'm like, oh, that's not that big of a difference, but I left it on. And now just when I pick it up and sort of look at it in general, like I said, everything just feels deeper and kind of richer and.
Yeah,
less
nice.
Fisher Pricey, which was one of the big concerns a lot of people complained about.
Yep.
Why is the chat room going on about?
But it makes a difference.
Why is the chat room going on about Muppets Most Wanted movie? Are we that boring?
Because, oh my God, it is so awesome! Sorry, what?
Have you seen it then?
I don't have to. It's Muppets.
You got to wave your arms like that when you go.
Did you see Muppet Wizard of Oz, though? I mean, I'm with you on Christmas Carol and things like that, but. And the
Christmas
original
Carol
ones,
is one of the greatest movies of all time.
Hands down.
Yeah. Like yeah, but have you seen Muppet Wizard of Oz? You can't.
No, does such a thing exist?
Yes, it's horrendous.
Yeah, it's
is it worse than Muppets in Space?
Yes,
Muppets in Space is awesome. He does that whole thing just so he can get a jacuzzi. That is amazing.
Muppets from Space is awesome because Gonzo. Okay.
The last Muppet movie was disgusting.
I like Treasure Island.
It was brilliant. What Treasure are you talking Island. About? You?
The last Muppet movie was disastrous. It was
class.
Awful.
Oh, I really liked it.
Treasure
Island was awesome. You and you don't know what you're talking about because the last Muppet movie was pretty good. Not as good as it could have been. I will give you that because Jason Segel really isn't very good at being the straight man. He wants to be the center of the film, which is a Muppet movie, and that's not how that works. The best characters are always the ones that are just the setup guy for the Muppets in the movie. So I kind of had a hard time with that. But aside from that, like, it was all the kind of goofy stuff that Muppets did when I was younger. So
it was
great. Yes.
I don't like Amy Smart either. I don't think she's very good.
More Miss Piggy.
Who's not very good? Sorry,
Amy Smart. I don't really like her as an actress.
Aren't you guys required to like the new one?
What, the new Muppet movie?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's got your guy in it, right?
Ricky Gervais. Yeah.
Oh God, no!
All British people like Ricky Gervais, right?
Yes, by he's like a big deal in the new Muppet movie.
No, the thing with Ricky Gervais is I like him. Right? I think he's funny. I like his observational stuff and touching on subjects that are really kind of painful to go through is good. And I thought Ghost Town was a great movie. And I liked The Invention of Lion. I thought it was superb as well.
But his stand-up is brilliant.
But hang on, let me finish. The cameo role he played in Night at the Museum, I thought he was shit.
And I didn't like that one? I was going to say that was my
favorite. No, I like the movie.
One.
I like the movie, don't get me wrong, but I didn't like him in it.
No, I love his role.
Because he's always just the same guy.
He can't finish a sentence. It's funny. It's just like, it's this subtle thing. And every time he opens his mouth, he starts to say something and then...
It's like he can act in his own stuff, but he can't act in other stuff because he's just the same person in other stuff.
Never finishes. It's hilarious.
I was just thinking.
Cracks me up.
I guess we'll find out soon because he's like the main character, one of the main characters in Muppets Most Wanted. So we'll find out.
He's the same bloke. Charlotte, are you going to start any video or anything or not?
Oh, can you not see me?
At the risk of losing your connection forever once again.
No, every time you lose your connection, you've got to restart the video.
For those of you on audio, I understand this is clearly irrelevant. But
this nice Skype feature.
What, Muppets?
The whole last 10 minutes has been irrelevant.
Well, exactly. I mean, well, there's large chunks of most of the shows that kind of
Muppets
fit in that
are never way. Irrelevant.
OneNote is coming free on Mac.
Okay.
Microsoft OneNote. Oh, Adam, steady on. Let's not get too political. Microsoft OneNote is going free with Mac launch later this month. Microsoft is working on a version of OneNote for the Mac that will debut later this month, says The Verge. This release will expand the note-taking software beyond its roots as a paid desktop application for Windows users and will complement the mobile apps that exist on iOS and Android.
So is OneNote essentially Microsoft Evernote, but not as good?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
More or less, yeah.
No.
I know who use it because they're all Microsoft at work, you know, Windows and Office and what have you. And by people I know, I mean a couple of folks that I know and Mr. Kelly. He told me that OneNote is actually pretty useful if you have to spend a lot of time with Office documents and also if you have to spend a lot of time with Outlook as your mail client. And so for him, it's super convenient to be able to bounce stuff back and forth. And it's approved by a lot of places. Like you can get, you know, permission to run OneNote where maybe you couldn't get permission to run Evernote or something else.
Right.
Adam, why are you being like this? You're not like this normally.
Because I programmed and worked on Windows for 6 years. And if I have to use Outlook again or any other Microsoft product, I'm going to just gouge my eyes.
Okay.
I have to use Outlook over a Citrix connection at work.
Let's say again, Paul.
Was I talking over the top of somebody?
You have to use what?
I have to use Outlook over a Citrix client at work. I feel dirty every single day.
Oh, bad luck, mate.
And if people listen to me, Microsoft, fine. I get people that have to use it, but I don't think I'd ever use it by choice. It's just not fun. As a matter of fact, this past week, I needed somebody sent me a document and I needed a font. I signed up for Office 365 trial so I could get the fonts I needed. Now I'm going to cancel.
Charlotte, what were you going to say, girl?
I just think it's quite interesting how much stuff, particularly on this kind of Office side of things that Apple are now making free. Obviously, we had, you know, all new Macs now come with free iWork, all of it, you know, Pages, Keynote, everything. All that's free now. And this seems to be kind of part of that. They're moving so that you really can run your Office for free on Mac. And I think that's quite a big shift they're taking.
See, I don't get the comparison with Evernote, I have to say, because Evernote is a note-taking application, I know, and it lets you put photos in and stuff like that. But I've used OneNote a long time ago, I have to admit. But the version I used was great because it just meant you could put anything you want anywhere on the page or on the screen, and you can link any part of that page or screen to any other note that you've got on another page or screen. So you can start typing and you can say, oh, I want this to be a table. So you make it into a table and you make a table up or you make a spreadsheet up. Or you can draw lines and connect boxes. You can do a mind map dead easily from it. It's like a blank piece of paper with lots and lots of form and structures that you can create around it. I thought it was a great application when I used it. I'm going back six years perhaps, but it was absolutely fantastic because it was that egalitarian kind of freedom to write what you wanted where you wanted, whereas Evernote is still pretty structured. You have to follow the line and the column and the line by line on stuff. And Evernote, OneNote is not like that. It is write anything, draw anything, do anything, anywhere you want, anywhere on the page, anytime, anyhow. Connect with this, connect with that. Move from one to the other. And as, if you're a student, I would have thought for things like reference notes for books and stuff like that, it would be absolutely magic.
And that's a lot more natural way to use things as well, isn't it, Fanny? Yeah. You know, I always have a pad of paper on my desk, and you sit and scroll things sort of freeform. You don't think, what category does this note come under? Is this a folk? Do you know what I mean? You don't define things like that. So actually something a bit more freeform is far more natural to a user than, you know, the structures version of Evernote.
For me, this was the most exciting story of the week.
Well, it's sort of a go-to information store. It's just it depends on what information you're talking about. So that's why I compare it to Evernote, is because, like, it's your, oh, I need to type this so I don't remember, so I don't forget it. I need to store this information someplace where I know I can retrieve it easily later. That's the kind of stuff that I use Evernote for, which is what I would ostensibly use OneNote for. And I thought the biggest news this week was that Microsoft was going to be making an actual new version of Office and not continue to try to beat the Mac people into 365 submission.
No, I mean, I will download this as soon as it comes out and have a play with it and see if it was the way it was when I used it several years ago.
It's probably better. I mean, to be fair, I think a lot of Microsoft software has gotten better, not worse, in recent years. And it's my understanding from people who, if you have to live in the Microsoft world, this is huge. I mean, OneNote is very, very popular and a lot of people really like it and use it. So I get it. I get it. I just left Microsoft so long ago. I just have no interest.
I think Microsoft have got better because they've stopped kind of being quite blinkered and quite almost la, 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 la over the stuff that they do. I think the reason that the phone is so good is not because of Microsoft and the OS that Microsoft has written. It's because they've listened to what Nokia told them they should do with it, as well as gone ahead and written with their own ideas. I don't think it's all...
And put a stonking big camera on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that Microsoft is doing far better now because it's actually listening to its partners rather than soldiering on. And because, I think to a certain degree, they were the leader anyway, so everyone wanted to follow them. But now they're much more in the mix of taking in diverse ideas from other people around them, which good to them. Well done. They're doing a lot of exciting stuff at the moment.
We have to be kinder to Steve Ballmer that we have been in the present.
No.
I'm trying to be kind. Come on, it's a Friday afternoon.
No one does anything. No one says anything about Steve Ballmer without doing Monkey Boy, and that will be the one moment in his life that he probably thought he was really hyping up developers, and all the developers are going woo at the thing, and actually it's the one thing that stuck with people about what an arse he was. So.
Well, there are people who just sort of talk about his kind of willful bloody mindedness about not accepting that Apple was making a device that might compete, whether it was the iPod or whether it was the iPad or whether it was the iPhone. Like, you know, it almost felt like for a lot of years, he only ever thought that they made computers and that hardly anybody had one and that it was a little beige square. So
to be fair though, I don't think he was alone in that. He was possibly the most high profile that kind of spoke out about that.
By far the most public.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was to their detriment, that his stance and by extension the official Microsoft stance was Apple makes the phone, isn't that cute? Yeah. Like, come on, you know. I think it will be interesting because a lot of that stuff is recorded and retrievable, and there's a lot of stuff that that maybe isn't about previous CEOs. You know, there wasn't a YouTube when Henry Ford was running things with an iron fist, and maybe he made a couple of idiot moves, but they weren't preserved forever on the internet. Yeah. So there's a chance that maybe history will be even less kind to him than we have been. You know, 100 years from now, it'll all be Microsoft was once ruled by a monkey boy. You know, we don't know.
Who roomed with Bill Gates. But we got a story put in the chat room and a question from Batwench. She has referenced the story that Apple has chopped the iPhone return policy from 30 days to 14 days, along with the carrier termination fees.
Where?
In the US, I presume.
Okay.
But She's saying, is this illegal in the EU? Ian Lewis has said, isn't the UK law 28 days? This is if you're taking the phone back because you don't like it, you don't like the service you're getting, you don't like the carrier, that kind of stuff. My understanding on cool-off is 14 days. Contractual cool-off is an EU stipulation. And my understanding of it, and I'll gladly suggest that I'm wrong, is 14 days. So I don't think that would be illegal in the EU.
And my understanding of this is that almost all other items in the Apple store, and not including the phones, have already been 14 days and have been 14 days for some time. Possibly just bringing that in line. And correct me if I'm wrong here, people in America, but the American return policy for pretty much all other, you know, your Verizons and AT&T are 14 days, so it's possibly getting a little bit confusing with having Apple ones that were 30 days and everybody else was 14 days. And it's maybe just bringing everything in line. It's just a sort of paperwork exercise.
That was the news to me in the story, was that the iPhone return policy was 30 days instead of 14, like it is if you buy it at,
I didn't think it was that long,
you know, any other phone ever, like AT&T or T-Mobile or anyone. It's always been 2 weeks.
2 weeks is a pretty long enough time to decide if you like a phone or not, surely, anyway.
It's all you get for a review. If you got a review unit, you only get 14 days with it, so.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. It should be long enough.
Yeah.
Apple, I think, are really good at this kind of stuff. When my MacBook went in for repair and I had the Retina MacBook Pro, that's got the MagSafe 2 connector. And, of course, I've got tons and tons of MagSafe 1 connectors. And I turn up at work in London one day and I've brought the wrong connector with me. The MagSafe 2 is still back here in the office. So I went to Regent Street and said, any chance I could borrow one? No, Fred, you can't. Oh, right, because it's your machine, and I've left it. And she said, yeah, no, we haven't got any loaner, just power blocks. And I said, there's nothing I can do then. She said, well, why don't you buy one and then bring it back in tonight, and I'll refund it for you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't they have the adapters?
No, it's the other way around. You can't go the other way around, can you?
Oh.
You can't go from...
2 to 1.
2 to 1.
You were needing to go from 2 to 1.
Yeah. I was going the other way around, so it was... But they were great. They said, I'll buy one and then just give us the money back. We'll refund it. Good lad. Well done. Thank you. I don't think it is wrong. There you go. That's my thought. My last knowledge of cool-off was 14 days, as far as I'm aware. Right, and Paul, you brought a story to the party, didn't you? You were talking about the iPod Nano pedometer patent application and everyone going ape shit over that. And
I don't know if anybody's going ape shit over it, but... there's a patent application, and now I'm going to try and pad for a little minute here while I find the story, because you kind of caught me blindsided there.
Sorry. the title is Apple, and I'll help you pad. Apple's iPod Nano pedometer patent application sparks iWatch speculation once again. Apple has been rumored for some time to be working on an iWatch featuring a biometric sensor and integration with other iOS devices, and has published a patent application addressing pedometer functions. And it's presented as evidence that the company is indeed working on a wrist-worn device. Now, the guy doesn't actually have anything on his wrist at all.
No.
And he's also missing part of his arm, unfortunately. So whether it's an amputee thing or not, I don't know.
Yeah. And it only seems to work at a gentle incline as well, by the look in the graphic. But there isn't actually anything in here about an iWatch. It basically is just talking about it being a nanopedometer, which... kind of makes sense, and it's kind of I don't know. I think it's a bit of a stretch for to say it's an iWatch. I think it's just another pattern that's kind of leaked about.
Well, the iWatch, if it really is coming, then they must have been. They must be very close to completing it. So a patent application now wouldn't be.
No.
It would be a little bit far, too close to potential launch, because we're talking May perhaps or April, aren't you, for an iPad event?
Well, when was this patent filed? I mean, it takes a long time for these things. These things go in. I would almost argue that this has probably been in there. This isn't new. They just come public at a certain point, right?
They just published it. That's right.
I can't see anything.
Yeah, and I mean, with something like the Nano, it had all those health features, you know, had the Nike features and stuff like in there. Mm-hmm. I would imagine they were patenting that stuff when they were putting out anything sports-related within the device.
I can't find it.
I haven't seen this one, so I don't know. You know, I could be... totally wrong, but
yeah. Well, another thing to think about with this stuff is I would like to think, I can't guarantee this, this is just wishful on my part, I would like to think that Apple's waiting until they can make something that is acceptably watch sized for people such as Charlotte and myself, because like I like the Nano and I really like the watch band for the Nano. But if I wanted to wear that on a regular basis, I would have to hire somebody to haul my arm around behind me. Like, yeah. It's just ginormous when this is all the wrist you have. So I think
they're going to have a massive girl problem with this.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a problem until... Because, like, we've seen with the iPhones and everything, you know, as lean and mean as they can make them, you know, in order to have enough battery to do anything and, you know, the other considerations that you have to make, you end up with something that is a minimum of a particular size. And in order to do anything useful with it, it needs to be a screen of a useful size. And I think that's the balance that they're going to have to try and walk. And there's just, I really don't see there being a good way to get enough on a screen that fits on my arm that it is a useful size screen.
Mm. And that doesn't mean you look like a massive dog. Like,
that
I think
too. Okay.
If I mean, if anyone can see it,
they're already in the Star Trek shirt. Come on.
Yeah.
Go on, Charlotte.
No, but if anyone could pull it off, it will be Apple. They'll be the company that can get the design right, I think. I mean, I think we would expect whatever they pull off is going to look slightly sexier than the Pebble or something like that.
Well, the Pebble looks pretty sexy. I got a Pebble.
Yeah.
I don't think there are many women that would wear that.
I've seen women wearing them. I don't know.
It's going to be...
That says anything.
Booker is already postulating the 5-inch iWatch in the chat room, so... That's going to look like a teletransponder device from Blake 7.
Something like
Leela would wear in Futurama.
There you go.
That's totally it.
This patent, I think, was filed September 2012.
Right, yeah, okay.
That makes sense.
No, isn't that when Money left or Muddy left? No, that's March 2012. Maybe you're right, yeah.
I'm looking at it at the US patent and trademark thing right now.
I've asked the chat room whether they think the watch is actually coming or not, and they're talking about chicken and mushroom pies. Thank you, Ellis.
Because it's Pi Day. That was me.
It's Pi Day Friday. No, my wife had a Morrison's chicken and mushroom pie, and she's got a picture on her Facebook. The piece of chicken is the same size as the pea that was in it, and there was only 8 pieces of chicken that were the size of a pea in the whole thing. And it was ridiculously expensive. So we're not happy with Morrison's. But they're going down the toilet anyway, so stuff them. What I say, stuff them. Toyota has accidentally leaked that it's got CarPlay plans coming in its 2015 models. Will it make you die?
We knew they were on board. Is that really a leak?
So the accidentally leaks CarPlay plans, says feature is coming to 2015 model. I think they haven't definitely said when it's coming and what it's coming to.
No, they didn't say when.
Yeah, I think they just said, we're in, but there was nothing definitive until oops.
You really think it's oops, or they wanted in on some of the PR that happened with the Geneva Auto Show, and this is a nice way for their marketing people to kind of slip something out. Oh, yeah.
One of those.
You kind of plan buying a car quite a bit out as well, so it's possible that they're kind of saying, you know, you're probably going to be buying a car in a year's time, so we'll tell you this is coming in case you think about moving brands.
Mm-hmm.
In-car technology is getting so huge now as well. It'd be amazing if a company like Toyota wasn't doing stuff like this.
Well, the interesting thing about this though is they released this thing on their blog, and they've then deleted the blog post and issued a denial that the blog post ever existed.
Oh, yeah, because this is an awesome way to get a lot of buzz really fast, right? If they just put out a press release, say, oh yeah, us too, they wouldn't get nearly the coverage that they're going to get by, oh, secret.
Not so secret, yeah.
Well, they're scared to death. If they put down that CarPlay's coming in 2015 cars, people are going, oh, I could hold on to my car for another 12 months. I'm not going to buy now. I'm not going to pull the trigger on this one.
Another great point is by doing it this way too. If they don't make it, right?
They did not. Hey,
yeah. So
we said that wasn't true.
Ready in time.
Yeah, CarPlay wouldn't make me buy a car though.
It definitely would make me buy a car.
It would. Oh, you would buy one car over another because it had Apple CarPlay.
I am currently. I've been looking for a car for a year. My car's due to be changed.
Just bear in mind, you're about to come across as incredibly sad here, potentially, Paul. But carry on.
Yeah, I know.
You go.
But remember, I think I ruined that with the big show and subscribe and save last night. So.
Oh, yeah, you did. That's a good point. Dude, get out.
Most expensive iPhone accessory ever. $50,000 Volvo.
I spend a fair amount of time in my car, and I need, the main thing about my car is the ability to use my podcast, Spotify, and my audiobooks. And there is no car just now that does that easily. There's some cars that allow me to stream audio, but I still have to hold the phone to start the Spotify or something like that and then hit play. The second a car arrives, and I don't really care what brand it is, obviously, as long as it's within budget, I would pull the trigger in an instant on that.
But I don't think you need CarPlay. What you need is a dock, and then you need the iPhone to engage a driving or a car mode on its screen. That's it. Five icons, done.
But that doesn't happen. That doesn't exist.
No, I know it doesn't. I said 12 months ago, what the iPhone, I would stick with the iPhone 5 if it had a car mode. I said so that. I've got a podcast. Proves.
I currently have an iPad in a dock in my dashboard
actually,
for that.
And then Kelly and Charlotte ripped me to pieces. There you go.
That doesn't sound like anything that would happen.
Not a bit.
No.
See, they're ganging up already. I can't win. They're even ganging up on me denials.
We're like Toyota, it never happened. We're deleting it.
Yeah. I have good one luck. Question about CarPlay. And that is, if it's good, and I know that this sounds weird.
They sound like a bad tribute band, don't they?
Yeah.
Is it going to be limited to car makers? Like, are aftermarket car stereo people like Pioneer and Alpine and Blah Punk and all those guys, are they going to get access to some of this stuff too? Because, like, right now, in the US anyway, you can buy aftermarket theater systems, you know, where the little DVD player screen pops out of the ceiling and whatever, and you can add all that after the fact if you want to. And I'm curious if they're going to do the same thing with CarPlay, where maybe Pioneer can make a head unit that you put in your car that has the big display on it. I've seen some of those already with a bigger display on them, where you can install that yourself later, and then maybe you're less influenced by what car you buy. Or like right now, I have no plans to buy a new car. But my car right now doesn't have anything because it's a 2000. So I don't have Bluetooth. I don't have any of the kind of things that, you know, I don't have seat heaters, which is not fun when it's really cold. And there's a lot of technology stuff that I don't have. So I bought a new head unit for my car that had iPod compatibility, which in like 2006 or whatever it was, meant that there was an aux jack on the back of the head unit and I can run a cable down through the console and plug my whatever into it.
What the hell's an aux jack? Auxiliary. Sorry, yeah. Aux jack. Sorry, man. I was sitting thinking cow horns then.
No. AUX. That was what passed for compatibility on the one that I bought. So now you can buy head units that have Bluetooth compatibility and all kinds of things where I could play music wirelessly to my car stereo if I wanted to. And I'm wondering if this is going to extend the same way as well, because I think that's going to be what's going to make it interesting, is if it's not tied to, a $60,000 car.
Yeah. Well, the Pioneer had... sorry, Adam.
I was just going to say, it's my understanding of the technology. I mean, it's just basically a bridge to the head unit. And there was a rumor that Mercedes is looking at trying to get CarPlay working in its older models, which would have like head units and in-car nav systems already in place that are using completely different technology. So it's really just passing commands back and forth. As a matter of fact, I think Volvo disclosed that like the display part of it is basically just using... H.264 video. It's just like you're just playing video from the iPhone's CarPlay interface into the display in the car. And then there's obviously a two-way communication back. Okay. So there's a way for the buttons to be active and stuff like that. So there's a layer on top of that. Because most of those car nav systems are the BlackBerry QNX.
The QNX systems. Yeah.
And so it's just CarPlay's just running on a layer on top of that, because it's not accurate. It's the two work together. They're communicating back and forth. Mm-hmm. But really, iOS is running the system, I think, on your device. So the iPhone is doing all the work. The display is just showing you the stuff, and it's just being streamed over there over the lightning cable.
So
that's my understanding
sort
of how it works.
Okay.
Battery power is going to take a right hawking then.
Well, that's why you have to plug it in.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because that would make it so that, yeah, like in a couple of years, I can just go buy a new head
unit. It's got to have that. Yeah, it's got to have that two-way communication. So they're going to have some sort of bridge, probably a little box that they would have to install that would do the do the commands back and forth, so that the two systems can talk to each other. But it's sounding like they're really loosely coupled. You know, it's not like iOS is running inside the head unit. Yeah.
But the API, I mean, I had a BMW, I had a Mercedes when my car was in for repair because someone else damaged it a few years ago. And that was Bluetooth compatible. And you could control your iPhone from the graphical interface of the BMW, the Mercedes.
Well,
so
limitedly,
the API has allowed you to create your own graphical interface to control your iPhone via Bluetooth.
Right.
I don't understand why you'd go for CarPlay.
Because you can't control apps. You can once you fire the app up, you can then play and pause it in some cases, not always. But you can't.
Right.
You can't kind of use Spotify and things like that easily.
But the API,
in my car, I'm using an Android phone, but I've got a similar thing where I can listen to a podcast and play it and stop it and stuff like that. But you don't have the same interactivity where you can change app or anything.
But
you want to go from listening to a podcast to Spotify? You can't do that.
I'll be gladly proved wrong as always, but you could start and stop the track you were playing from the Mercedes interface on your iPhone.
Right, but you can't go into the Spotify app and now pick something else, right?
It chooses a different playlist.
You can't browse through your music or check, or even more importantly, go from listening to Spotify to Audible. So
how many apps are you going to want to interact with when you drive?
Three.
Yeah, Audible, Spotify, and podcast.
And Maps. Probably,
and maps,
right?
Good
you
point.
Need to want to go
maps as well.
Jump back
so
and forth.
Could you? My point would be: could you do the same thing if you could just identify four applications, or four icons, or five icons that would go on a blank black screen on your iPhone, and it's set into the dash? Would it be the same?
Well, yeah. I mean, and a lot of people are using that solution, though, right? And like, so if you don't want to do the aftermarket thing, like Kelly's talking about, there's people you can take your put an iPad dock in your dash and integrate it into your stereo, and away you go. Now you have.
And the other thing to remember is that it's not necessarily always up to the driver. Like sometimes when I am passenging, I'm the passenger, and
passenging.
I get to
passenging. We got a title.
Yeah, show title.
Like that's my job. When I passenger, I am the DJ.
To passenger.
Good girl. Well done. Oh, don't smile, woman. Smile. That was funny. Laugh at yourself.
I do all the time. Hi, I'm here. I think I'm curious how it's gonna work. And I totally agree about interacting with the apps. But I think the app I would want to interact with is Siri, which would help with a lot of that other stuff.
Yeah,
because you can tell Siri to open Spotify. You can tell Siri to open other things. You can't tell Siri, or you can't use the controls on the steering wheel. Mr. Kelly's Subaru has controls on the steering wheel that will control like the CD player and the radio and the volume and stuff. And if you plug in with a 30-pin cable, or if I use a lightning cable, then I can control the music with the thumb controls on the steering wheel. But otherwise, like, I can't switch apps. I can't tell Pandora thumbs down that song. I can't do any of that stuff.
Here's my thinking. I'll be glad to be ambushed on this, but my thinking is, you've created something that you're saying Apple has got an in-car system which will be proprietary and will be licensed to car manufacturers. Someone's going to be paying for that. That's going to be me, and it's not going to be given complimentary. The prices of the cars are going to go up commensurate with that. Apple are taking a cut off the cars that are being sold, then presumably for the license. And everything that you're telling me that CarPlay does, I can pretty much already do. That's why I said the other week, you know, it's not big enough. It's not more enough. You expect it to be something a bit more whiz-bang than just doing something that's already technologically available with an aux cable and a stand.
Well, how's that any different than what Ford was doing with Sync?
But Sync did an awful lot more. It would have, you know, a phone service and things like that, wouldn't it, for calling emergency services, and it had automatic detection off your airbags and those kind of things, and it had voice control, which was actually worked.
So does CarPlay.
Well, yeah, but it's not. I just expected, because Sync's 5 years old now, I think, 4 years old. So I just expected Apple to just do a bit more. I'm not ragging on Apple. I'm just saying when Apple comes out with something for in-car entertainment, I expected it to be a little bit further ahead and a bit more of a leap than this is.
That's I agree with you, actually, and I think this is kind
Holy
of
the shit.
Typical of Apple Core at the moment. But actually, we're not here having the. I keep saying this, and it's. I know, and I'm sorry, but we're not having the. And here's another thing moment. You know, okay, so you've got a slightly nicely synced up in-car system. Well, like you've just said, you and Ford have been doing that for 4 or 5 years and have led the market in it in a lot of ways, how they've built in-car entertainment.
Mm-hmm. You expect a leapfrog is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's kind of where Apple is at the moment. They're not doing these big, like, show-stopping things anymore, and it's really sad.
Here's the thing to me is that I think that in this case, from where I'm sitting anyway, it's more up to the car makers to be clever and find some way to build the system. Like Adam was talking about how they work in conjunction with one another. It's not, you know, it's not one doing all the work or the other doing all the work. So I would expect the car makers to be clever and then also be able to, you know, somebody like Ford, like you were saying, Charlotte's a market leader. Somebody like Ford should be able to go, and we can do something similar if you have an Android phone that runs this version or higher. Like, I expect it to be on them to do something particularly clever with the in-car stuff so that, yeah, you bring the cable and whatever you plug into that USB port, we can work out getting it on the screen. To me, that would be the piece that would be the really revolutionary thing here. Apple making it so that my iPhone that works in my Mazda now works better in a car I buy later doesn't seem very revolutionary to me. It doesn't seem like something that's going to be a dramatic change. But what I will tell you is when I look at this list on Apple's website of all the cars, there's a very slim chance I'm buying another Mazda when I get a new car, unless it starts showing up here, because right now it isn't there.
So hang on. Charlotte agrees with me. Kelly nearly agrees with me. I'm buying a lottery ticket tonight. 90 million euros, mate. Thank you very much. There won't be a show next week.
Bookery has the thing that'll sell it to you.
Go on.
In the chat room. So if Apple layers on a kit, skin, voice, and attitude into the thing, then we all
shut
have
up
it.
And take my money.
Well, yeah, I mean, Siri, I've got to admit that I only had iPhone 4S last time, but on that, Siri was pointless. And Siri was pointless on my iPad Air as well. I just couldn't get it to work. It's crap. So I could either have Siri not work via an aux cable, or I could have Siri not work via a really expensive in-car play system that the manufacturers are hawking me for. And one of the people in the chat room, Chris, has said, you know, voice control might work for Americans, but it doesn't seem to work very well over here. And it's not. Siri's not good. Last time I used it.
It worked for me.
Is Siri not like your Brummy accent?
It worked for you because you're American, Kelly.
No, until I got sick, and now that I'm all, like, congested and crap,
all right.
Siri doesn't like me a bit. Yeah.
So, okay, you don't sound any different, I have to say. I don't mean that.
The like Sudafed is working right now.
Okay, good. That sounded like, stop malingering, woman. But that wasn't it. I was just saying, you sound normal. There we go. Oh, no, that's not getting worse. There we go.
So you just need to use your best, worst American accent, right? And then it would work. Is that the key?
There you go.
There's got to be some people in Brooklyn who can't get it to do a damn thing.
There are. There's certain parts of the country where I've heard people say it's crap.
I'm betting Boston and most of the South are just furious at that thing.
I remember I watched a bit of that thing Cole the other week. It was on Discovery when I was slipping through. And the guy that was talking about Cole, he was like, what the hell are you saying, boy? I can't understand a word. Is that Louisiana that's in or something like that? God.
You got to use your. I guess you got to use your best American California accent, then you're good.
Yeah, well, yeah. Midwest and Detroit's a good one, isn't it? Because a lot of the newsreaders are Michigan, because it's very mild and mannered. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UKIP2. We love them to bits. We had an email that suggested we were getting an awful lot more adverts on the show, and therefore we should cut back more adverts than a London phone box. Sorry. To the person that didn't like that, Mark, but it's not adverts. These people support us. We don't peddle their wares because they give us a ton of money to do it. We peddle their wares because they look after us from the start, really, pretty much. When I used to be Bagel Tech News and it was just me doing it and we were getting 12,000 downloads a day on it, I couldn't afford the bandwidth. And I'm going back 5 years now, 6 years this year. Bandwidth then was a really expensive deal, and 12,000 downloads would have put me out of business. Network, UK2 stepped up and said, "We'll have it. It's okay. Don't worry. Just give us a mention. That'd be fine. Thanks very much." They never expected anything from us. They just picked up the service. We now get a free server from them. It's dedicated to us. No one else is on it. The bandwidth costs are picked up by them. What we have would cost us £400 a month, except it costs us nothing a month because UK2 provide it for us in return for, "Please just tell everyone how good we are." That's it. So please, if you can, support UK2. And people have said to me, "Well, bandwidth's not expensive anymore, so why don't you go somewhere else?" I got some loyalty there, I'm afraid, because they supported us when bandwidth was expensive, horrifically expensive. So please, please, please check out UK2. If you're having any kind of trouble, they will look after you. Their prices are really keen and their support is second to none, as Paul Wheatley will now attest.
My blood's starting to boil.
Why?
Yeah, we don't want to go there, I don't think. The people complaining about advertising on podcasts.
Yeah, I get it too.
We don't want to go.
No, I mean, we get people who sponsor us, and they give us a donation each month. And thank you to those people that do. BagelTechNews@gmail.com is the donation thing for PayPal. Criff Beaton last night, he's got a great thing coming up. Watch this space, because if you've got an application you want to develop and you want government data to crunch to get an SQL database or something like that out of it, he's the man to see, and he's going to give you 1 million hours of computer time, 1 million CPU hours on the supercomputer that he runs for the government to get the government data out. So your app will come absolutely fantastic. We'll come back to that. But he bought me drinks last night. He said, "Thanks, here you go. Have another drink." I'm like, "Oh, it's my round." He went, no, there's no rounds because I'm buying it because you buy on my podcast free of charge. So thank you very much.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Good on him. Thank you.
There's awesome people out there.
Cheers,
like that.
Cliff.
It's just, you know, you put on hours worth of entertainment and, you know, people are going to complain about a 30 seconds or a couple minutes of, you know, thanking some supporters.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, we like UK too because they're awesome and they help us. So,
I did tell this guy to piss off. So, I don't care. And the other people.
See,
that
I normally
us,
don't. I'm too nice and I won't do that to people. But,
mate,
I sit here quietly and fume.
Have you seen my follow back wankers hashtag? Anyone that follows me, and then I've got a rule. If on the followers page, followers.com, FLLWRS.com, if you appear on the same page, that means because you subscribed and you unsubscribed within a week. And if you subscribe and unsubscribe within a week, then I just tell you that you're a follow back wanker because you're just looking for the follow back to get your stats up and then you bugger off. So, and I'll out you and I'll block you. We always do something rude around the show, the adverts. I don't know why. The other people that support us are the Network Union. So what they do is they provide the broadband service here to post the video shows out and to push them out up onto Justin TV. So they're a BT business partner. Now, I keep getting it wrong what I'm supposed to say on this, so I'm just going to say it and you go and talk to them and you figure out what it is. They work with BT. They're an approved business partner. And you have a business broadband service. Doesn't matter what size your organisation is, whether you're massive or whether you're operating a huge wide area network or whether you're just talking about a small enterprise. If you are with BT and a business supplier, then you can get Network Union to act with you. So they will become an extra layer over and above the great service you already get from BT. You'll get the specialist knowledge of these guys. They will help you with wide area networks if that's what you want, or they'll help you with just your basic simple pricing plan. They will make sure that you've got the right service coming in for the right price that you pay. They will tweak your service, and it's an extra layer on top of everything you're already getting from BT. They're fantastic. They're absolutely really good. They really know their stuff. Go to their website through our link on the webpage, BritishTechNetwork.com, and you just send them an email. Just say, "Hi, you know, tell me a bit more about what you can do. I'm a business customer with BT," and they will come back and tell you exactly what it is they can provide for you and how much benefit they can give you. They don't keep your email address for anything like spam or anything like that. They will not send it to you, and they don't sell your email on to anyone. It's declared on the price, and I would not say that you should put your email in if they didn't do that. They don't do it. So please, give them a check out. See what they've got. Doesn't matter what size organisation you are, whether you're Paulins at University of East Anglia or whether you're talking about someone like me who's just got a little small setup. Check out Network Union. They are supporting the network. Please support them. Also, we've got a community section. Now, if you've got a business that's techie-based of some description, and you followed around BT for a while, I know who you are, send me what it is that you do. Send me a sample or something like that, and I'll talk about it. We've got Woodpad. If you go to woodpad.com, then you can get the fantastic things that are made by Mr. Turner. These are absolutely beautiful. This one's made out of ash, and it's just a stand for your iPad. But it's beautiful. This is the Jewel, so you can put your iPad at the back and you can put your iPhone. I've also got a cherry one here, which has got one either side, and it's got two different angles that you can put in, one there and one the other way, and they hold it at different angles for different viewing. They're just simply made, beautiful, handmade pieces of blocks of wood. And there's one for your iPhone with a little lightning connector goes up through the centre there. They're absolutely gorgeous. That was 20 quid. I think the other one's 20 quid, and I think this was about 15 quid. They're lovely. And James is a long-time listener of the show, so please support him as well. Also, CHNO Technology, they do the Tough Tech Duo. Those are still on sale to you, and BTN listeners will get a 10% discount when you check out from Chris's store. All you need to do is put in BTN10 as your offer code, and you get 10% off. And also, support Darren Griffin. He's Pocket GPS World, which we talked about the other week. Had a bit of trouble with the iTunes store. That's all gone now. So support him as well, because he's a fantastic lad. He's really helped us around the network. If you've got a community project that you want out in, send it to me. Has the feed gone a little bit darker?
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
It was from Adam's anger, but made it dark.
He's turned into the Hulk. He's turned into the Hulk.
Flip the switch.
Yeah, we always use the white point, and now it's all darker.
There we go. There we go. We're all right. A little bit, I suppose.
A story's just happened sort of as we were on air.
All right.
Which is kind of interesting. It's on VentureBeat. Apparently, I know he said kind of stuff on this before, but Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak said that the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden's a hero, and he said, I believe that Snowden believed, like I do, the US has the right to freedom. He had the guts and courage to sacrifice his life for a principle, and so on. So he's another one of these big tech hitters who's ploughing into the NSA rail.
Right, okay. It's a good job you're not going to Macworld, really, then, isn't it, Charlotte?
Yeah.
I have no opinion whatsoever on Edward Snowden that's broadcastable, because I am not having a cavity search in a week and then getting turned away and coming home anyway.
Quite right.
So you can keep that. I'll edit that bit out.
I tell you, my best. I literally turned up. I was flying to Washington the week the NSA story broke. I turn up at immigration in Washington and they go, "So what do you do?" Hi, I'm a journalist. Yeah, what kind of journalist?
Terabytes of data up my arse.
Yeah.
Feel free.
It was an awkward moment.
Excuse the pun, feel free.
Yeah. It was not good. But, so Steve Wozniak's plowed into that debate as well. And
he flies a lot as well. He's
a whistleblower, not a Russian spy. Looks like it'll be interesting how the big tech companies, including Apple, respond to this, actually, as it sort of drags on and on.
BTN gets you an even better price, apparently. Special offer on the Duo today. There you go. So there's even more stuff. If you're listening to this podcast through Downcaster Summit, stiff shit.
Should join us live on Friday.
Should have been on Friday. Should have been on Friday, absolutely right. The cool thing, right? What have we got that's cool? Adam, start us off.
Crap.
Okay, Paul, start us off.
You know what I'm going to do? So last week, I think I mentioned I've been playing around with iBeacons, so I'm going to get really nerdy on you guys, if you don't mind.
What have you done now?
I was just playing with this last night. So Red Bear is the name of the company. They make this thing for Arduino. Do you guys have Arduinos? Like those things?
Yeah.
So Arduino is this little, platform that you can program and basically do. I'm messing around with doing hardware stuff. And so Red Bear makes they call them shields, but basically it's a way to add functionality to your Arduino. So I have the Arduino Uno, and with this shield, it adds low energy Bluetooth. And what that enabled me to do was put together a little demo where I could hook up some LEDs and then write a little iPhone app to control the LEDs turning them on and off via low energy Bluetooth. So I've been messing around with that stuff. So there was some little Xcode sample I got off GitHub, and I took this to my iOS developer meeting last night, and it was like incredibly fun, easy to put together. So a little hardware hacking, software hacking kind of project. And so it's called the BLE Shield from Red Bear. And I'll get you the link in the chat room so that you can throw it into the show notes.
Okay.
But definitely more on the geeky programming side. But, you know, that's part of my life and what I do. So I'm having fun learning how to, like, mess around with iOS apps and hardware. And there's all this great stuff out there now. Like I said, these little beacons that I mentioned last time from Blue Station, Two Canoes Software, the guys that make the low energy Bluetooth eye beacons, if you want to mess around with that. And then this is more on the low energy Bluetooth controller side. So it was like, I made this little app that had a like an analog stick controller on the iPhone. So it would come up, and then as I would rotate around on the analog stick, it would light up different LEDs on the Arduino through this low energy Bluetooth shield.
redbearlab.com/BLE shield/
Yeah, and I think things like
they've got a library of stuff as well, haven't they? Of pre-made
stuff.
Yeah,
and they've got code examples and libraries, and so if you want to get into this stuff, they make it really, really easy. There's a couple of videos you can see right there to kind of start playing around with. You know, and I just grabbed this project and loaded it into Xcode, did a couple little minor tweaks, and then suddenly I had this iOS app. It took me about an hour to throw the whole thing together. And
you make me sick. I can't get any.
Yeah, so here, I don't know if you can see this. So this is the little app. And so what would happen is as you move this analog stick, it would light up the different icons.
Okay.
I can't see that on the, I don't know if you can see that on the.
I can see the stick and you're moving it around there, yeah.
Yeah, and so as you would move the analog stick, it would, you know, and it controls the brightness, and so the LEDs would, you know, the further you got to the edge, it would light up. So basically, what I realized was I can now take this and adapt it, and if I wanted to control, say, like a motor, I could put together a little Lego car and now have a, you know, with a motor on it, plug that into the Arduino, and now I've got an iPhone-controlled car that I built myself. So
that's cool.
The kind of stuff you could do.
Because the thing is, as well, there's an awful lot of stuff going on at the moment with Bluetooth controlling remote control helicopters and stuff, and at massive distances as well. So your little button there could end up being a virtual control stick on an iOS device.
Yeah.
Beautifully.
Yeah. So if you've been curious about getting into this stuff, what I like is, you know, the Arduino, I think, is, I can't remember how much they cost. You know, it's under $100. I think $50, $60, something like that US. And then, you know, $29, you get this little shield, and now you're doing a little Bluetooth stuff. So if you've ever just been curious, I'm just tinkering around with it, but it's a lot of fun.
So, yeah, the Arduino
never
stuff
done
is
hardware
really cool.
stuff before.
Mm-hmm. You need to know how to solder though.
Or no, solder, no depending. Soldering.
No, sorry. For like other stuff with the Arduino, you need to know like all the because you can do lots of other cool stuff with an Arduino, but a lot of it requires soldering to some degree.
Yeah, I've done no soldering so far. I mean, this is all prototyping kind of stuff, so rapid prototyping. Because I don't know how to solder.
Cool.
I'd like to learn, but people who listen to the show know I fried my iBook when I tried to solder it.
Mm-hmm. We knew that.
Yeah.
good pick. Mr. Wheatley, what do you have?
So, as you know, Ewan, we're going to Macworld.
No, really?
our conversations over the last couple of weeks have been fairly heavy on batteries and what batteries we can take on a plane and all this kind of stuff to make sure that we had enough power for movies and all sorts of things we're gonna do on the flight. And so I have been testing out this Mophie for the iPhone 5S, and it's not the new Space Saver one because I think I just came out today. It's just a standard Mophie. But I had the Mophie for the 4S, and I was a little disappointed with it. It kept on. So basically, the bottom part kind of snaps off, and see if I can show you on the camera here. It's very tight. That's my point. The 4S one was very loose, and it kept on falling off, and then eventually I lost a little bit at the bottom. But I can't actually get this one off just now to show you. But it's really impressive. I get about, I would say, quarter charge is out of it. It's advertised at 150%, but in the tests that I've done over the last week, I think I'm only getting about 1.25. It's got a little kind of thing on the back there that shows how much battery power is left with little dots, kind of standard for the Mophie, and a little switch to switch it on and off. I love it. Two downsides to this. One's an obvious one. It's heavy. It's a battery, but it's
if you take your I mean, I used to have a Mophie juice back when I had the iPhone, and if you take it apart and put just the juice back in your hand, it doesn't feel that heavy on the one that I had.
It's combined the two. It does. It is heavy. I mean, I'm carrying it about this week purely for test purposes. But I probably, when we come back from Macworld, it'll just get stuck in my bag and it'll be a handy extra. But the other thing that I dislike about it, and this worries me a little bit, is it gets very hot. And I don't remember the 4S one ever getting as hot as this one does when you switch it on. It's I could feel it to an uncomfortable level in my pocket when it's charging.
That is not good.
Yeah, that's all right. I've already got kids. It's fine. I don't have to worry too much about that. but for the point of view of it just charging my phone up to Macworld, I'm kind of comfortable with that. I'll just kind of keep it away from my leg on the plane. But I like it. I think it's about 100 quid or something like that. Other than the heat thing, I think it's very good.
Redneck in the chat room says, I've got the same problem with the Mophie. It gets very hot.
Yeah.
And Kelly is shopping for one now. You should be concentrating, woman.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not shopping for a Mophie. I don't like them. I had an unsatisfactory experience with them a while ago, and so that's why I won't go back. It wasn't the hardware. It was the service.
I have bad service. I go with that. Yeah.
And the thing is, I don't know what technology I'm going to have on me. And so instead of having a case specifically for my phone, like if my iPad was low, I prefer to have a separate battery pack that I can carry around with me instead. So
yeah. I use the mono price ones. These guys.
Yeah. Anker, A-N-K-E-R, they make some really nice ones. For people who are looking for something like the Mophie where it's a case, but maybe don't want to huff around the battery because they don't need it all the time. Jackery makes a new case where you basically put a bumper on your phone all the time and then you snap the battery on just when you want to charge it. And it's like $40 cheaper than a Mophie is, I think. It's like $60 instead of $100. So that might be a good way to go too.
How'd
you feel now, Wheatley?
I feel absolutely fine. I don't like things moving parts. So if you have to snap it on and off, then it might loosen over time. But
just so people
I'm just
the
defending
price.
Myself. It's...
Yeah, you'll pick shit, Wheatley.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's
the mono price ones
just
$28. 5,000 milliamp.
How much?
5,000 milliamp hours for $28.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
We'll see. Kelly, come on then. Top that.
Okay, so I have a two-part pick. So that wench, friend of the show, friend of mine, sent me a Raspberry Pi.
Keep going. That's my doorbell.
She had no use for it, so she sent it to me, and I have figured out exactly what it needs to be. It is going to be a server for a Plex server. And the reason I can do that is because there's a super cool project called RasPlex, and it's the Plex home theater port that you install on your Raspberry Pi computer. And the reason that this is useful is because then, as an added bonus, Josh Centers has written a book called Take Control of Apple TV, which is one of the Take Control books from Tidbits. They're awesome books. And in his book, he talks about if you're nerdy enough to be somebody who would set up a Plex server and set it up on Raspberry Pi, then you can follow the instructions in Josh's book on how to set up your Apple TV to also be able to access Plex and all of the content contained therein.
So for me,
there's some jiggery pokery you have to go through on the other end.
This is Wheatley getting his own back.
No, that's rubbish. You don't want to do that. sorry, please carry on, Kylie.
No, you're in trouble. Remember, she's going to Macworld, mate. She's going to poke you in the eye.
In 2 weeks, I can reach you. that in mind.
So you're about the same size as well, Wheatley. You could be in deep shit here. Sorry, Kelly, go ahead.
So I think, like I said, if you're, and also it's Pi Day, so I thought Raspberry Pi would be a good pick. So if you are interested in doing that, then here's a way that you can use your Apple TV to access all of that stuff, which is very cool. And the thing I will mention about buying books from Take Control is that if you buy 3 books or more, you save 30% off all of them automatically. And I think their most expensive titles are $15.
Nice.
And they're digital, and you can get whatever format you want. And if they get updated over time, like if you buy something about, you know, Take Control of iPhoto, and then iPhoto gets updated, they'll help you out. You know, if they release an update to it, then you get that update for free. It's pretty good. So, yeah, I like all the books that I've gotten from them, and all the ones that I thought maybe I knew most of that stuff, I still always pick up something new from reading those. And I really enjoyed reading Josh's Apple TV book. And you don't have to sit down and read the whole thing. You can just kind of flip through it and find the parts that you want to know more about. And it's still super useful.
Good pick.
Yeah, good stuff. Can I pile on that? Because I think I can't remember if I made this pick on here. I know I did it on Twit and on my show. If you're going to do the whole Plex Connect thing with the Apple TV and the Trailers app and setting up the DNS and all that stuff, there is a really, really helpful menu bar utility. Unfortunately, the guys stopped development on it, but it still works, called Plexify. And if you get that, it sets up Plex Connect and walks you through the whole process. Yeah. You got to follow all the steps and do exactly what it says. But if you do, it's almost bulletproof. It should just work for you. But read and don't skip any of the steps. Otherwise, it won't work. And then you'll be frustrated.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing about, like, I've heard that you can do this. It's one of those things that people whisper about, you know.
I've done it. It
worked. And, well, Josh actually breaks down all the steps. And when you sit and read through the steps, like, each individual step doesn't seem like it's anything super complicated. So for me, that was the thing that was really useful, was he finally sits down and says, first you do this, and then you type that, and then you hit return, and then you wait a minute, and then when you get the prompt back, and like, he breaks it down in super detail. So it's pretty awesome.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent. Charlotte, what do you have for us?
Yeah. So I was, because I'm really mad at MacMail, I was going to pick Thunderbird, which is a free email server. But actually, I realized the thing that I've used the most, like gadgety, is a Fitbit Flex. I know they're not that new, and people have had Fitbits for time and time and time, but I'm obsessed with this. I only got the Fitbit recently, the Flex one, because you can just put it on your wrist. You don't have to worry about shoving it down a bra or in a pocket or something. And it's absolutely, it's brilliant.
What do you shove down your bra?
Yeah, that's how you're meant to. Other people with, you know, the old fashioned like Fitbit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it comes with
a clip.
They
recommend that women put them down the bra.
Cool. Yeah.
As a way of, like, it monitors the steps and stuff.
Which does keep it from falling out of your pocket.
And also it stops it falling out of your pocket.
Well, it gets my vote straight away.
Anyway, all stop putting things down the bra, and let's focus on the Fitbit Flex.
You started this? You can't say bra to a bloke and expect him to carry on concentrating.
I accept that. It's true. But so it also has a really nice little Bluetooth interface on the Mac, which is really nice. So you can almost see in real time what you've done for the part of the day. Obviously, it's all on a phone as well. And I was amazed, and I think I'll probably blog about this at some point, how much it makes you actually think about moving. Because for us, you know, we'll geek, we'll like spend far too many hours sitting in front of our computers. But actually having something on your wrist that's blinking and telling you you haven't moved enough is pretty encouraging way to like get off your butt and move and not just sit in front of your computer all day.
Yeah.
So I think they're about £70. If you're in the UK, they're about £70 in John Lewis is where I got mine.
Okay. How does it blink if it's in your bra, though?
This one goes on my wrist.
Oh, got you. Sorry. Yeah, no. I thought
the wristband.
I thought you had a bra option, though. So I was thinking how the blinking would work on the bra option.
The previous edition.
Speak to Jeff Gamut about that.
Oh, he's got a bra edition, right?
It's a Fitbit one, and I have one as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, you got to clip it on, and it's notorious for falling out of places. So I use the fifth pocket in my, the only thing I've ever used my fifth pocket for in my Levi's.
Yeah, that's all I ever use it for. That's, it's in there now, as a matter of fact.
There you go.
And like, I like mine just because of the same sort of thing. It doesn't blink at me to tell me I've been sitting still for too long, but remembering that I have it in my pocket sort of makes me go, yeah, I should go, you know, I should go make a lap up and down the stairs before I go do whatever it is I'm going to do and things like that. It's kind of nice.
Because this, if you tap it, that has little LEDs in it that tell you how many, out of portion of your target, which is 10,000 steps, how much mm-hmm. of that you've done. So if it gets to sort of this time and you've only done one or two, you think maybe I should start walking around the kitchen or something.
Rob in the chat room says it scares you when it tells you you've not moved that much during the day. And he also says the little one vibrates, apparently.
Yeah, it's a really good silent alarm. it wakes you up, so you can set an alarm and it buzzes on your wrist and wakes you up. It doesn't
make noise. It just vibrates against your arm. The ones with the clip also have a wristband. So you put it in the wristband and then you hit the button and you can use it at night. And it will track your sleep as well. And then you set a time for it and then it will buzz on your arm and wake you up in the morning.
Yeah. Pretty and nice. Yes, you can clip it in your shorts if you prefer that.
Results.
It's a silent alarm. It's a pedometer. It monitors your sleep.
Did you say price?
You can enter all the food and stuff you eat. It's really good to like monitor if you're being healthy or not.
Did you say the price, Donna?
And water. It'll track water.
Yes, makes you drink water if you haven't drunk any.
Did you say price?
Yes, she did.
£70.
£70 there, £99 here.
That was obviously around the bra statement period, so that's why I didn't hear it. my cool thing is the book. I didn't get this free or anything like that. I had to buy this. I got the book to go with my iPad Air, which is now my British Tech sideboard. Because it's got the driftwood finish on it. The driftwood finish is lovely. It feels great in your hand. But there you go. And it comes in my book now. And my book, it's leather. It smells like cricket pads used to. Very reminiscent of my days playing cricket when I was a youngster. But there you go, the book. It's not cheap. I think they're about £70. But it's nice. I do love it. And it protects your MacBook as well. So there you go. You can get these for all of the MacBook range. Tom Hiddleston owns one, that wench. And he's on her moist list. So there you go.
Ooh.
The book. You need to listen to the big show from last week and then you'll understand the moist list.
I can imagine. I could get there.
I think we all understand it without any further explanation.
Yeah.
Charlotte? Were you saying you could understand it with Tom Hiddleston?
No, sweetheart. Oh,
sorry. Okay. Christ. Where can we get a hold of you? Adam?
Oh, you're going to do me first. Okay.
Maccast.
Over at maccast.com. Pretty much Maccast everywhere online. And we have communicators with Jeff Gamet and Michael Johnston, which is more iOS focused than Mac focused. So if you're into that stuff.
Cool. Excellent. We should have you guys on the Pocket Show, actually. That'd be a good crossover show.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. And the Pocket Show, of course, if you like my segue there, is run by Paul Wheely.
Yes. And you can also find me on the Gamer Show on this network, and I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Kelly, where are you, Mrs.?
You can find me hosting the Tua Talkcast on Sunday evenings Pacific time, and you can also find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso.
Thank you. And Charlotte A. Henry. Stop tweeting and texting.
No, I'm just looking at pictures of Tom Hiddleston.
All right, got you. To make a decision. That winch loves him, so there you go.
It's Loki off of...
That's right, yeah.
Isn't he?
Yep, that's him.
Where are you, Charlotte?
Where can you find me?
Yeah.
At Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. CharlotteAHenry.com, links to everything, including digitalpolitica.net, which is where I blog far too often.
Excellent. Manager Ewan Rankin, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week. However, Wheatley and I may be unbearable. We'll be like George off Blacko in fourth. Promise you. See you next week. Thanks for listening.